Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
And you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing on a Friday afternoon, if you're wise and you're watching us brand new live and inglorious Technicolor here on facebook.com/offtheball, on youtube.com/offtheball, or indeed on Twitter, where you can follow us at Off The Ball as well. Last week we had Patrick Mullins in studio. He set the bar very high. This week we might even have outdone ourselves. Desi Scal, how are you?
I'm very good. Very good, John.
Johnny's still with us?
Yeah, I haven't left the studio. Yeah. I knew Desi was coming there. But Patrick did set the bar high. He was very good.
He did,
good
yeah, he was great.
Yeah, yeah, difficult shoes to fill now, I can tell you.
He's a good talker.
He's excellent and very articulate and very clever fella now.
When I was with the Irish Independent, he used to write previews for the main festivals and he'd write them himself. And
that never happens.
It was practically flawless copy. Like, and from a journalist's perspective, that's rare.
Yeah, you know? And a bit grim as well, isn't it? That somebody can just do your job as easily.
Totally, after 4 years in college and all the experience we gained and all that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
Johnny needs to go riding horses, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, yeah. Jeez.
He'd never make the weight. I just wanted to talk about something that happened. So last week we were sitting here and you got a WhatsApp and I got a fairly similar message about Baldy Flood passing away. And I'm related to him by way of marriage. Myself and Justin married sisters. And I was at the funeral last week and it just struck me really that a lot of us on the outside of the racing world don't have a full appreciation for the fact that this is a travelling family. Justin in his eulogy spoke about his actual family, but then literally made reference to his second family. There's an amazing photograph from a point to point around Christmas time there where they were the only two bookmakers to make it through to a point to point in Boris House in December. I had no concept about this side of racing really until I was actually at the funeral and kind of in the company of racing folk that I was chatting to Jonathan Mullen about this during the week and he's like, it's just a big travelling carnival. It moves from venue to venue and it's not really Leopardstown and the Curra and Punchestown and Fairy House. It is those point to points.
Well, it's the nature of the game. I mean, when you're in that industry, you're a bookmaker, you want to lay bets. You'll go anywhere where you can lay bets. I mean, I'm going back years and years ago when Leopardstown had to finish at 5 o'clock. So to make sure that all the bookmakers and the clerks had to get straight for Shelbourne Park. Or likewise, if they're down the country, it was straight back to Shelbourne Park. So you can imagine the length of a day that was for the clerks and for the bookmakers. But Seamus Mulvaney and Edward Flood and all the lads, they cover Cork, all the point-to-points. They might go to the point-to-points and there'll be an Irish race meeting on and they'll be representative by other members of their team at the racetracks. But he was such a great character. I mean, his brother Liam was renowned as being a great poker player, and his father before him, Tom.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's a dynasty. Justin is carrying it on, but it's a generation of the Flood family, and he was a great character. He was very well known for voicing his opinion after a race when a favourite would get beat, and he'd shout in, giving the jockeys a bit of, you know, what's it afterwards.
Right.
And I remember there was a famous one at the Phoenix Park. When he was given Cash Asmussen the full volley up at the Phoenix Park. I won't tell you what was said on the occasion, but it lived long and he'll always be remembered for that. And there was another day, I think he gave Charlie Swan a bit of abuse at Ferry House, and as a consequence, Charlie got upset and reported him, and the stewards had him in. And of course, when Edward went into the stewards' room, like, he mellowed, he got the fright of his life. He got going to get warned off. But he was a great character, really great character.
It's one of them things that unfortunately is dying away from the game is the betting ring, and it's a bit like newspapers, it's technology and trying to adapt it, and the figures that came out last week are obviously worrying, and HRI is kind of trying to do its best, but it's just very difficult because it's all obviously people on phones now. But that ring, I have so much time for the bookmakers, just the characters, and it is a travelling shop. Like, the O'Hares from Newry will travel to Ballinrobe, come back that night, and then go to Ballinrobe again the following day. You can imagine that. And Baldy, he gave me a few lifts there in the past few years, and I just got the sense from him, this lad is not retiring. This lad will pass away, you know, at the race course. And he didn't quite do that, but he was laying bets right up to the end. And I found out subsequently that he said to somebody, I'll be dead once I've stopped laying. This is my life, like, you know. And he was just one of them characters. And They're the type of guys that made going racing and still make going racing a vibrant thing. Now the odds are different now because it's dictated by kind of external factors. But when in the old days where they would take an opinion, it was part of the experience. Why is such a one taking on a horse? Why is he 7-4 when someone else is 5-4? And you know, just great stories. Like, and I remember there was an old story about a point to point, and point to points are kind of, they're exempt from any betting exchange or all that, so they're still kind of, they're almost like going back in time a bit for the old days. But there was a story of one bookmaker, and he was with his son, and they were really, really stuck for cash, and an old boy comes up to them and he's like 600-4 the next favourite. So the son says to the father, he says, what are we going to do here, we're broke, like. So the horse goes out in front, he makes all the running, and he comes to the last, jumps the last brilliantly, 10 lengths clear, and the two boys are, what are we going to do here? And the old boy that had the bet dropped dead. They never had to pay him. And they're the stories. And if you spend a night with the bookmakers, with Seamus Mulvaney, with Baldy when he was alive, with Justin now, the stories sure. they tell you, you know, the likes of Seamus Farrell at the Dogs, Ted Hegarty, their characters, like, you know, and it really added to the experience. And it was sad that Baldy died, but he died in the right way.
I guess the other thing was that the whole racing community came out, that it wasn't just the bookmakers, that, like, there was a sense of a representative organization, really, that, like, racing is an industry, but actually it is definitely something that everybody, there are racing folk, the way there are hurling people, there are definitely racing folk.
Oh, absolutely. I mean there would have been people at his funeral. I know a couple of men who went there who would have had several clashes with him over the years. Like, he'd go up to the handicapper, he'd go up to the stewards, and he'd say, that favourite never tried a yard, what are you going to do about it? And those lads went along to the funeral because, like, he was part and parcel of the fabric of racing. And Johnny has said that they are a dying breed, and the ring is getting smaller and smaller. And someday soon, in the not too distant future, I think probably the ring will be extinct, and race meetings will be a tragedy without the, like, they generate the atmosphere.
Totally.
The people come there, they go down. I'm going back now before there was any such thing as pictures, not even commentaries into the betting office. And the first price you'd get on a horse would be Sean Graham at the Curragh. And Sean would get up and the crowd would start converging. Once he'd get up in the box and he'd start putting up the finger to start. And of course, he had his little tip-offs, what would be alive.
And you can imagine the anticipation, because you're waiting since the declaration the day before for that price, and you've no idea what's going to be.
Like, you get at the Curragh now to be a tip for one of Paddy Prendergast's two-year-olds. John Knox might have one. Vincent would have one. But the locals were going to go in on Paddy Prendergast's two-year-old. And Sean would be aware, and he'd start 50-1, and he'd go down to the middle, 50s, he'd go to the bottom, and then he's coming down. So there's only a couple of horses left, and he'd put up a 2 to one of Darkie's two-year-old, and they'd drive him nearly out onto the track, and he'd be roaring at them, you'll all get on, you'll all get on. But that was the first price you'd get about a horse. Now you can back a horse at tomorrow's race meeting, probably this evening at 5:30, 6 o'clock. So the people who are going racing now are getting what's left. And it's not adding up, but because the people who are having their bet the night before, they're going to watch it tomorrow and at the races, so they're not going to go to the track.
It's a challenge. It really is a challenge. And I still enjoy going racing, but I think, as Desi says, the likes of Baldy, they are a dying breed. Like, and that racing is all the lesser for it.
I mean, the character, you're talking about Baldy being a great character in the betting sense. I mean, you have Peter Casey, Oliver Brady, you know, the likes of Mick O'Toole and all that, and Barney Corley. I mean, all them fellas contributed so much.
To the mythology of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the mystique of Barney Corley is walking in, who's he with, who's the fella with him? But halfway through the day, everyone would be following the lad that was with him, because he's going to be the fella that's going to have a bet for Barney. And it was the whole
spies
mystique and the intrigue.
Yeah.
And, like, going back them days, you're looking to find out something that might be fancied on the day, because there was no point in knowing it the day before, because you know where you're getting on. But now the whole thing has changed dramatically.
You talked about that being a dynasty. Your own story doesn't involve a dynasty. You're not from a massive racing family background. You did lick it off a stone.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it came about, to be honest, because in our family, the two eldest lads, John and Joe, were mechanics in Dublin, in Rutland Place, all their life. Other brother Noel worked in the airport, and my sister was a secretary. So I don't know where the racing came to me, but...
Were you born in the city centre?
No, I was born out in North County Dublin, Ballybon.
Okay. Right.
You know, and I went to Kildare then in 1964 as an apprentice to Dermot Wells' father, Charlie. And I was there for a few years. And
can I just ask about that? Because that's a big, that's the key bit there. Like you've just skipped over. I went to as an apprentice. How do you convince Dermot Wells' dad that you should be an apprentice?
Well, I suppose in them days, I mean, I'd only a bit of experience from riding ponies for a neighbour in Ballybahal, and didn't have much experience. But even in them days, you could get into a stable and without having ridden a horse.
Right.
Like Johnny Murtha went down to the race centre and he'd never sat in anything.
That's mad,
now,
isn't it?
There's an awful lot of young kids coming into the game now, like just Jack Kennedy, for instance. Jack was a champion pony race rider, which is outlawed by the Turf Club, you know, which is, it's crazy because that's where the young lads are learning their trade. And it's nearly as good as an academy as such, because they learn at 10 and 12 and 13, 14 years of age, you know, how to compete.
Yeah.
And
the value of an elbow.
But they go around this little tight tracks. I mean, you close your eyes, I think.
They can't
get round a bend.
Yeah, and there's a kid actually riding this year who, in his day job, he rides the horses around Dublin, I would say, the tourist stuff, like for Guinnesses, and he's graduated to be a jockey as well. So, but it, with Desi's point, you went in there, but you had to work really, really hard, like, just to even make it. The trainer knew he was getting an asset in terms of a kid that is going to be paid just enough to get by, but will have to work his socks off while he's there.
Well, the first ever interest I had in a pony race rider, there was a pony racing event held in Kildare Town, just a field out the back of the Friary Church. And all the talk leading up to it was that there was a fella from Limerick. He was a fantastic pony race rider. And we were playing soccer at the time. So we said we'd go out to the pony race. And after we played in Dublin in the morning. So we came back and we went out to watch this fella. And all the talk was going around that this lad is the next Leicester Piggott. You know, the word, this lad is sensational. So we went out anyway, and he rode two winners, and it was Tommy Carmody. And it was just unbelievable. Like, these little lads came out, and these ponies, they were going like billio. It was frightening now to see. And, like, I mean, the pony racing is big, particularly down country. Kinsale, Derby and all, this is the big one. But it still keeps the conveyor belt
of talent sending
fellas into the industry.
Yeah, well, Jack Kennedy's doing all right. You're great mates with Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, I struck up a great partnership with him over the years, going back. John Mulhern, God be good to him. Just mentioning John, we were talking the other day.
It'll be Charlie Haughey's son-in-law.
Son-in-law, yeah. John married Emer. But we were talking the other night in Leopardstown. Kevin O'Ryan had a few words with me in the parade ring last night, and of course he referred back to Don Run and whatever. And what was so significant about that? So I said, the significance was that she was the first to win Champion Hurdle Gold Cup. She was a huge draw here in this country. Like, when Dawn Run was running, you couldn't get into the tracks. She was an unbelievable box office. So for her to win the Gold Cup, and the way the race worked out, and everything about the thing with John Joe and Tony, and Paddy was a fantastic character. Mrs. Hill was a colourful person as well. And you knew that everything wasn't right, say, between Mrs. Hill and Paddy. And Paddy wasn't happy with Tony being jocked off. And at the same time, everybody wanted the mare to win. So getting back to John Mulhern, there was 2 years running at Cheltenham. Ireland only had one winner, and that was Galmoy. He had the horse that won the Stayers Hurdle. Now Cheltenham has turned into... it's a venue where Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott take each other on to see how many winners Ireland will have. So it just shows you how much has changed.
It's incredible.
But John was a huge United fan, and he used to bring me over to Old Trafford. And we could go 7 or 8 times a year.
Right.
And he'd just give me a shout and say, we're going Saturday and we're going Wednesday night. Be a replay of a cup match. We're going. And he was pally with Alex. And then we got in after matches in to meet him and all that. And then Alex got into the horses, and, you know, there's plenty of stories there. And
Rockets of Gibraltar.
Well, and
did you ever talk to him about Rockets of
Gibraltar? Would you believe this? And this is as sure as I'm here, and it's the best chance I'll ever get to put the record straight. when that situation was a tug of war, like, I never mentioned the hearse to Alex Ferguson, and I never mentioned the hearse to JP McManus. And it was pulling and dragging at me. Should I say something to either? And will I ever, because I was friendly with both enough that I could possibly have said, is there any chance that this could be resolved and stop all the stuff that was, because the papers were having a field day. Like, I mean, it was big stuff, and yeah, it was getting that little bit nastier and nastier. And to be honest, I obviously admired Alex because being a United nut, I thought it was fantastic that I knew him. And then on the other side of the fence, I have JP on this side. And I mean, he's invited me to all the big venues, the golfing venues. I was at his John's wedding. I was at Sue Ann's wedding. I mean, they were unbelievable. I mean, down there, my goodness, it was unreal. Just for the entertainment at Sue Ann's, we had Lionel Richie. He just came on. He just started to tinkle the piano just when the meal was over.
That's a hell of a wedding.
We got an hour and a half of Lionel Richie, and I said, wasn't that unbelievable? And a fella said to me, he says, that's only halfway. So there was a bit of a break for a half an hour, and everybody moved then to the back of this marquee. I've never seen a two-story marquee in my life. And out the back then, we had, for about 2 hours, Billy Joel.
Are you going to resolve this story about Rocket Gibraltar then?
Now, I never mentioned a word to either, and I couldn't wait for whatever way it was going to be resolved. It was unbelievable. Like, there were two people that I admired greatly, and they were, you know, head-to-head stuff. It was awful. And I often wonder if I had said something to one of them. They said, well, sure, look, if you can do something, we'll try or something.
You shouldn't underestimate as well the power for racing to have an owner like Sir Alex Ferguson, because I grew up a Liverpool fan, absolutely hated Man United, hated him. But when I got into racing, it was around the time of Rocket Gibraltar. And that meant a lot more to me because I could relate to it. And I think them colours, despite the fact that, you know, the colours were deemed subsequently to be kind of more ceremonial than anything else in terms of his ownership.
Well, you see,
Gibraltar had a swagger, and it was appropriate that he owned them.
But it was fantastic, like that, like when he was involved in the ownership of a few other horses apart from Rocket Gibraltar. Mm-hmm. Like, see him arriving at the Curragh, and he with the Coolmore team and with the whole. I mean, it was fantastic for racing.
Absolutely.
You know that Alex Ferguson is involved in racing in Ireland. Now, I don't know whether that plan was at one stage that the lads were going to buy Manchester United, because they had were major shareholders at a stage. And I think there was an option that they nearly had to bid for or get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of the turmoil, I think they took the latter and just got away.
I mean, they made a profit on it, but ultimately the club does go on to become this massive multi-billion valuation
A sad end, though, to, I presume, what was an acrimonious kind of relationship between them, because it was sad. And I get it would have been hard for Sir Alex to take on the might of you know those guys, but it was sad because it was a great, Rocket Gibraltar was a superstar horse, and it was a great few years.
Well, I mean, we'll never know the ins and outs of the whole thing, but I think everybody missed out.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody lost. There was so much sort of bad press about it and that.
Yeah.
And like there were two juggernauts, and well, you know, it has moved on now. And, but it would have been great if they had stuck together and everyone see how it would have resolved. I mean, an ideal situation for me would have been that JP and John Magner and probably Dermot Desmond, if they had bought Manchester United, and Alex, after his career, might have went in as director of football and
or ceremonial president. Yeah.
Anyway, that's
he's well again though, or relatively well.
Yeah, he rang me. Well, actually, my only contact with him, I was at the Arsenal match 6 days before he got the turn. And it was Arsene Wenger's last match, and we were up in the box, and Arsene Wenger came in, and it was a lovely moment. Now,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I'm sure.
Because
he had the turn before then, had he?
No, the following Saturday.
Sorry, yeah, because he presented him with that. That was a real touching moment. Yeah.
Yeah, but when he came into the box, he was there, and then he had a bottle of wine, and he had it in a grand decorated bag and handed it to him. And you know, they had a hug, and it was a lovely moment for them. And I was bursting to get a photograph with the two of them, and I said, I can't interfere with this moment, you know. And Arsene Wenger shook hands with us all going out, and like, they were great, you know.
Beautiful.
And it was just a great time to be there, and the match was atrocious. But
as are all Man United matches at the moment, just to put that on the record.
Since he's gone, I mean, it's been atrocious. I mean, I watched 18 minutes of the cup final, United and Chelsea. When I was young, I'd watch the cup final from the minute it had come on grandstand at 20 past 12 to 6 o'clock. It's just a change. But no, that was 6 days after. And then my only contact with him was his own phone number. So I knew he was in bad shape, whatever, getting the bulletins on the television. But they dried up very quickly after about a week and said he was doing well and that he was going to go home. So I just wrote a letter to Cathy, his wife, and I said, she'll get so many letters. I won't get anything back for a long time. And the next thing was, I got this letter, and he wrote it himself and said that he appreciated all the concern that was coming from this side, and with all the good wishes and that he had, he couldn't but fail. And he says, I won't fail, I'm doing well. And that was brilliant. So just before I was going to the Oaks, he rang me himself, and he was brilliant. Now, I knew the way he spoke on the phone that he was in good shape, and just wished me well. And he says he was doing well and recovering day by day, and he was doing 20 minutes on a bike, walking for 15, and he has a nurse coming into him twice a week just with the balance. And he's going away to France now for 3 weeks, and he's going to a match in September.
Ah, oh, class. That's great. That's brilliant. I didn't realise that he was making such a great recovery. Let's move on. Will you stay with us? Because we were going to preview Galway a little bit and talk about the King George as well. If we wouldn't mind, you know, just to keep Johnny in the straight and narrow. If there's somebody else in the room who can go, no, you're talking nonsense, that'd be useful.
Yeah, right, well, okay. Yeah.
I want to play you this first. It's a preview of how amazing Galway's going to be. Have a look.
My grandfather won it a few times, and my uncles Tony and Tom have both won it. I've been lucky enough to ride in the race twice, but I've yet to trouble the judge, but it's something I would love to do before I retire.
The anticipation and the horse coming up the hill, and it's fourth and it's gaining ground, and will it make it, and it falls at the last, and then the roar.
Unfortunately, I haven't won the Galway Plate as of yet. It's one major prize that's eluded me. Great race.
My favourite memories would be going racing when I was a kid with my mum and dad and watched the horses race by.
Still haven't won a Galway Plate. Would love to do that.
It puts an emphasis on all aspects of a horse's ability. It really is a great test of a thoroughbred.
Does, in my opinion, bring Galway to a standstill on the Wednesday.
The pinnacle of the summer. Everyone wants a chance of riding the winner at Galway.
From the time you land there on the Monday at lunchtime, places just buzz until the following Monday. Galway is probably my favourite festival of the year. I'm hoping to have a runner and hopefully win the Galway Plate this year.
It's the race I always wanted to win, and I really felt I'd done something when I'd won it.
The total prize fund for this year's Galway Plate is worth €250,000.
No doubt it'll be some great horse that'll win the Galway Plate 2018.
Yeah, so why is the Galway Plate so special? Why do people get so obsessed about it?
Well, at the moment, I'd say one reason that you'd like to win it is the prize money. It's phenomenal prize money, and it comes so early in the season. Like, the build up to the plate on the racetrack, it's not that great a build up. There's only one or two trials for it, you know. It's a tough race for punters because there's not many trials, as I said, and you just have to hope that you might hone in on who might have set one up for it. And obviously the betting market will be very important, but you'll have JP, you'll have probably three or four, five runners maybe, and Jigginstown will probably be the same. It's a difficult race to work out.
Yeah, it's not the plot job it would have been in the past, because it's just such a high-class race now that you can't plot a horse so much to get into it, because you have to be running to such a high level anyway just to be even to get in as a low weight. And what you now have more, the trend in recent years, you know, everything changes, is that you have a second season novice who's probably a grade two, grade one horse potentially, like maybe Road to Riches, and if he can sneak in off a reasonable weight. But it's a really, really good race, like really classy race. And I used to bemoan Galway a bit when I was younger, because it was like, why does it get such crowds? Because, you know, it's kind of a lot of the racing isn't
You were
great.
Too much of a purist. You were like, all these people enjoying themselves.
But then I started going to Galway, and also, then to be fair, it changed into a higher class festival. If you want, if you've never been to a race meeting, I would suggest you start next week in Galway.
Just our charity bet with the tote.com. Last week we got off to a bit of a flyer. Johnny picked out Sea of Class, meaning the injured jockey fund is up €340 already. So next week at Galway, we're going to split our 100 quid into five 20 euro bets each day. We're going to try and win the tote place pot, which is 30 grand every day at the festival. So each day we're going to tweet out Johnny selections.
And that's only 30 grand minimum guarantee. So there's every chance, like, and also with the pick six, there's going to be some huge pools in Galway.
So you wouldn't be happy with the 30 grand. You want more than that, is it?
You have to give some of it back to the tote, unfortunately, you know.
We mentioned earlier about the importance of the betting ring, the bookmaker's ring. Galway epitomises what the part the bookmakers play.
That's because where
they're
the reading.
Bookmaking ring will be full.
Mm.
It'll be a big square, it'll be full. And people, it'll be in there, it'll be a melee in there. And that's how important the bookmaker's ring is.
We're going to put Johnny on OTB AM each day next week, and we'll obviously tweet out the details of the bet as well. And just a reminder, last year it paid out over a grand on three of the 7 days. Check out thetote.com for more details.
It's a lovely bet. It really is a lovely bet, because you don't have to pick the winner, just pick the place horse.
Yeah, so just to explain how it works, thetote.com place what works. Pick a horse to be placed in races 1 to 6 before the start of the first race. If your place spot selection is a winner, you get paid out after the sixth race. Minimum stake is 10 cents, so that's for one line. So you get one.
I give a bit of advice to people as well. Try and avoid favourites if you can, because if you pick a non-runner, it defaults onto the favourite. So basically, the favourite will have a larger pick of the pie. So it's almost like doing the lotto, but not picking obvious numbers. You don't want to, if you win this, you don't really want to share it with many people. Altruism goes out the window. You want a good dividend. So I would say go for third, sort of fourth favourites as a general rule, and try to avoid the favourite, because if you do win it, your payout will be far bigger if the favourites disappoint.
Okay. I see how that works now. You were going through ringing some names for Galway next week. Is that just a...
Yeah, actually, I just looked up there, and Jessica said that she'd never won the plate. I think she could have a squeak with Woodland Opera this year. Decent enough horse, I think, goes on the goodish type of ground. Think he has a chance. A horse that looks pretty well in the hurdle is Max Dynamite. I mean, he's only touched off in the Melbourne Cup. He's yet to reproduce anything of his best, but he's off a very good mark, having finished second in it previously. I think Max Dynamite really could have him.
There's going to be a plot or two in that race, not more so than the chase. There will be, because there are a lot of dangerously well handicapped hurdlers there, like quite a few of them owned by JP.
Yeah, well, you'll come race time. There'll be plenty of market movers, you know. Mm. But just those two, I think have chances in the big race.
Are you going to races? Are you stopping going to races?
No,
are you having a break?
I was going to take a step back, but I was initially supposed to finish last night at Leopardstown, but I said I'd finish at the Curragh because it's close to home, and we went back to the golf club and had a lovely evening there. The two lads in the golf club, Paddy and Hugh, looked after us brilliantly on Sunday night. So we had a great time there. And Pat Keogh then said to me about 10 days ago, he said, "You're finishing on the 26th.
That's the Leopardstown guru.
Pat is manager of Leopardstown. So I said, "No, Pat, I'm finishing at the Curragh." "Oh," he says, "that's a big disappointment now." He said, "We were hoping that you'd finish here." He said, "We'd like to do something." So he said, "Would you come along as..."
Hang on a second. I'm getting here that you and Alex Ferguson are mates. Ferguson rang you up and said, "Here, listen, do what I did, right? Tell them you're all retiring, but then lull them into this false sense of security, back with a bang, and you've got another three
back
seasons."
No, there'll be no seasons. But Pat invited us up last night, and it was fantastic for me. I had two brothers and sister there, never at a race meeting. We were never at a race meeting together ever before.
And they're still living in Dublin, actually.
John is in Howth, and my sister Kitty is in Kinvara Road, up near the Phoenix Park, and Noel is in our home place in Ballybal. So they were all there, and Mary, my wife, and Richard and Nicola were there, and lifelong friend, Surgeon Fred Kenny, was with us. And we had a lovely evening, and thanks to Pat Keogh, and the way we were looked after was tremendous. So that finished up last night. So today, I have to get a presentation from the AIR, who have worked for all over the years, in Galway on Monday, and they offered me to do the big race on Monday night.
Class.
If I want to.
Yeah.
That's a tough call now. Are you done or are you done?
Well...
are we going to get a live on-air exclusive here?
Well, no, I said I'd do it.
Lovely.
I said I'd do it, which sure is the best way to go out
I have to say, that actually it gives me a bit of a kick now, because I miss, I was quite selfish. I went to Galway and Kildare, and I said to me mates, once that game is over, I'll rock up at the Curragh for Desi's last couple of commentaries. Instead, I went to the bar and I watched Kerry and Monaghan. But if I get the chance to see Desi's actual last commentary on Monday, I've redeemed myself somewhat.
I tell you one thing, you're not too popular down in Kildare, because I think you said on the programme last week, would you pay €15 to go into here, my last commentary at the Curragh, or pay 15 to see Kildare getting beat in Newbridge?
Well, I may well have said that, right.
Yeah, well, a few diehard Lily White.
Yes, can you tell us about that night, Johnny?
It was an interesting night. It was a very interesting night. When you end up on the shoulders of one of the Kildare footballers, you know, who you've never met before, and lose your shade.
And he was the one subject to the whole controversy.
He was. We can't go any further. But that's actually great. So Desi's in Galway on Monday.
One race.
The GPT. And he's going to call Lamini as the winner under our guest last week, Patrick Mullins.
Lamini, that's what you're saying.
Okay. My view.
He hasn't won that race, has he?
He has not won the race. The Connacht Hotel Handicap would have been the old GPT, it might still be known as, but Desi will give it socks for that, I think.
Oh, well, I missed out on his, his record. Beating Ted, yeah.
Right.
I remember when he broke the riding one of Parkinson's, at Leopardstown, I got that one all right.
I thought we were going to get a huge exclusive on Rock of Gibraltar. It didn't really happen.
No, there was no exclusive to give. There was no exclusive to give, only that I never got involved.
Yeah.
That was it.
Which is probably, in retrospect, a wise thing.
Well, I tell you, if I had helped in any way to resolve it, I'd be feel an awful lot better now.
Sometimes it's hard to resolve things.
Sitting on the fence and did nothing.
Yeah.
It's harder when you're dealing with heavyweights like that.
Yeah.
Like even when you said about the photo with Wenger, and can you imagine, Desi's not of the millennial selfie generation, but you still want to get a photo with him in one of the most historic moments of...
Yeah, well, it was just, that moment was there in front of us.
If I'd have been there, I would have said, lads, listen, hang on a sec now, get Desi in the middle.
And over all the years, like we watched the spats with Alex and Wenger and all that, and then like it's all over and...
I would have gone up to them and I said, lads, would you mind taking a photo of me and Desi?
Yeah, and they'd ask, I'd bring home the photograph then, and people would be saying, who are the two lads with you?
Boom, that's why we had you. Zing. King George at Ascot, let's talk about this. So, at the moment, Michael Stout's looking for a sixth win, and everybody's saying it's more than likely going to be a Stout.
Well, yeah, like you've sort of... Two to one shots, so coupled, he has a 2-3 chance of winning the race. So outstanding chance if you couple Poet's Word and
Crystal Ocean.
I suppose there were a couple of talking points here. Kew Gardens doesn't run because Aidan's horses, for I don't know, I can't remember, Desi, the last time Aidan's horses were under any sort of a cloud. He did a terrible year in 2003, I think. But, you know, he had a filly in the Oaks, Magic Wand, run abjectly. He had a very highly regarded filly at Leverstown called Goddess run shockingly. So some of his horses do seem to be out of form, and Kew Gardens apparently was one of them. So he is a horse that now doesn't run. He's running Rostropovich and Rhododendron. But the two stout horses are typical stout improvers, I think, just 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, who seem to be really blossoming late in life, thanks in part maybe to getting a patient training regime from stout.
Where does this race fit in the whole kind of calendar races? What is
You probably better, because it's not the race it used to be, probably because horses maybe are retired. There are so many alternatives as well.
Well, years ago, the King George was the acid test of a 3-year-old against the older horses. But in the last maybe 15, 20 years, a lot of the horses don't continue in training as 4-year-olds. And as a consequence, but you can have vintage years where you have a cracking 3-year-old now put to the acid test against the top 3-year-old of the previous year, who's now 4.
Okay.
So you have... This is the major test. But I think the King George has just dipped a little bit in the last maybe 10, 15 years.
And to be fair, this is a good renewal. Like, if Cracksman turns up, Cracksman was the great white hope this year. There's a suggestion that he's more interested in his love life than racing. John Gosden said as much as Roy Lascott, that he was sort of the fillies from the previous race were going back to the paddock, and Cracksman was not really bothered about running here, and he ran accordingly.
Well, I think he's showing every indication now that he'd like to move on to his
next career.
His next career.
Like yourself. But if you saw, Jerry, if you saw Bath races this week, I've never, ever seen anything like it. Bath don't water because I'm not quite sure why they don't water. It's some interesting track. The ground was like something you'd see in Arizona. Right. It was yellow. It was. Cracks. It looked like an all-weather track.
And dangerous, I presume.
It would suit a small number of horses in that. A lot of horses would just get jarred on that ground, but it would suit. But that's what they're waiting on. It's worrying what England and Ireland has had to deal with. And the ground staff in Ireland probably aren't getting the credit they deserve. You know, bringing in these like diggers from abroad, like to actually basically mine water out of the ground in Wexford and stuff like this from Germany, bringing in these drills, like, you know, and all these tracks, how they've maintained the ground. And Cracksman is reliant on an awful lot of rain at Titteron.
So you're with Poets Ward?
I'm with Chris Lotion.
Chris Lotion.
I think Poets
Ward. But it's very hard to split in the betting.
Good stuff, Desi. Thanks very much. Johnny, enjoy your weekend.
Absolutely.
You're and a reminder, of course, that Friday Night Racing is brought to you with goracing.ie. So thanks to everybody involved in putting the show together today. We're obviously on the radio this evening from 7 o'clock. If you're still watching us on the live stream, thanks very much for that. And if you're listening to us on the repeat on the radio, well, then get on the live stream every Friday afternoon live from 3 o'clock on facebook.com/offtheball or, of course, on offtheball.com. Cheers.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off The Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.